to Music from the Tower, highlighting the beauty of sacred and classical music. We come to you from the Tower of Hope on the magnificent campus of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove, California. Now, here's your host, John Romeri.
And welcome to this episode of Music from the Tower. This is John Romeri, your host. And today in our tower, we have, well, you know, he's one of our competitors here. This is Craig Williams, and he thinks he's at one of the largest organs in the world because he is at the West Point Cadet Chapel. Craig, welcome to the show. It's so good to have you.
Well, thank you very much, John.
Well, I am just myself finding out about Craig. He's a Facebook friend, but brand new friend we just met, and so we're going to find out a whole lot about this man. But I think number one is to know that he's a Southern California boy. So Tustin is your home?
Correct.
And you grew up here all the way through your bachelor's degree, and you became the organist at one of the most famous spots in the country, really the world. Certainly one of the largest organs in the world. Number three, poor Hazel Wright organ. This is number five.
Okay.
But you've got 23,000 pipes compared to our 17,000. So we have to bow before you today. You are the organist at the biggest places. So, well, welcome to the show. It's just great to have you.
And thank
it
you.
Is so fun to meet you. Well, often in our guests that we have, we want to find out what brought them to music. Here you are, one of the most well-known organists in the country, playing one of the largest instruments in the world. And you started off in little old Southern California. So that's pretty cool. As somebody who started in Central and Northern California, I'm always in awe of how somebody came to music. Did you have a musical family? How did it come about?
I had a mother who loved music, and my mother sings. And she sang. She was actually a soprano who, when she grew up in Connecticut, as did my father. They got married in Connecticut.
Okay.
But my father, who is not a musician, but he was an electrical engineer that worked at Hughes Aircraft Company.
Oh, wow.
That was here.
So that brought him out here.
And so when he was here, my mom very early on latched on to what was then the Irvine Master Chorale, which later became the Pacific Chorale,
right.
And she joined that group in 1970, and she sang with that group for over 40 years.
Wow.
And it was her music, listening to her sing very early on.
Classical concerts.
I was probably one of the very few 8-year-olds who could probably say that my favorite choral pieces were the Bach B minor Mass and Carmina Burana.
There you go.
Because we had that exposure, so.
Well, and sometimes that's what it takes. You know, one of the things I constantly do on this show is encourage people to go to live performance. But I bet those were moments that you thought, wow, this is pretty cool.
Yes.
You know, did she sing in the church choir as well?
She did. She was the professional soprano soloist at local churches, a Methodist church in Tustin.
Oh, that's great.
And then she sang at St. George's Episcopal in Laguna Hills for many, many years.
Wow. So music came to you pretty naturally. Did she play piano?
She played some. She would probably say she did not study as well as she should have, but she was always practicing and accompanying herself.
Okay.
And then she also worked with she did some recitals with some very, very fine pianist accompanists. And she would always also take me up to see the LA Philharmonic in, you know, up with the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion when they were there long before Disney Hall.
More live concerts, more live music.
So we went to a lot. We really did. We saw many, many pianists. I remember seeing pianists, you know, do things like the Rachmaninoff Third and Mozart and Beethoven. And, and I know that very early on, I somehow in my mind, I thought, I want to do that. I want to play the piano.
And was that your first instrument?
That was my first instrument. But because of church, always going to Easter services and hearing a Hallelujah chorus, hearing the organist do the Vidor Toccata, the postlude, and being exposed to some really great organs, including the one at First Baptist here in Santa Ana, and then later on, of course, the magnificent organ here at the Crystal Cathedral, and what came here a lot. And even hearing,
we're going to talk more about your exposure to the Crystal Cathedral.
So, yeah, well, there was quite a bit. I began really to be even more and more interested in the organ. I just liked the power. I just liked the way that it was loud, but had so much color. And we had some marvelous, marvelous organists here. Marvel Jensen, of course, Frederick Swan when he came here, Richard Unfried. These were all people to which I was exposed to seeing the very best of organ playing.
Well, we had some of the finest organists here in Southern California, didn't we? I'm so proud that we have individual shows with a lot of them. We even have a show in our archives with Fred and Richard, which is just phenomenal. We're so happy and honored here at Christ Cathedral to have that legacy. You know, we talked earlier about both of our mutual friends, Chris Bardini.
Chris,
I was in Pittsburgh for a long time. So when Chris moved from the Crystal Cathedral to Shadyside Press, I was the organist at St. Paul's Cathedral there at the Church of the Assumption. And, you know, so I knew Chris for a little while before I moved on to St. Louis. And now he's at the Greensburg Cathedral doing wonderful things, written some things, pieces for me in my choral series. And he's just a great guy, you know. So we're anxious to bring him back and play Hazel again. But a wonderful, wonderful man. Well, it's those kind of inspirations that really do it, right?
Yes.
So you did undergrad right here at USC.
Correct.
In piano, though.
Yes.
Did you do some organ while you were there?
My biggest regret is that I didn't knock on the door of Ladd Thomas or Cherry Rhodes and just say,
organists.
Do you even have like even a grad student that could give me lessons on the side? So, no, I did not study. I had a church job, though. And it was a small organ in a Lutheran Missouri Synod church, so it was liturgical, and there were a lot of demands. But I basically just taught myself.
Wow.
And so the pastor was a big fan of Paul Montz and Jan Bender and that style of church music. And so very early on, I had to cut my teeth on some literature. And then his wife was an organist, so she introduced me to the Dupre chorales and some Bach. And so I struggled, but I was determined to get to the good stuff. And I also really teach myself to play the pedals. And the congregation got to hear a lot of wrong notes, but we muddled through.
Well, you're hearing one of the finest organists in America tell all that story on the radio. Forever we will know that you were playing wrong notes. Well, I doubt that there were many, let me tell you. Well, Craig, it's fun to hear somebody's backstory, isn't it? It's just for me, and I know for our listeners, it's always fun to see how somebody kind of finds their way to a musical career. I've had so many parents of you know, really promising organ students say to me, how can they make a living in this? Is there really a career out there? Shouldn't they be a lawyer and just dabble with the organ or the piano or whatever it is, or a doctor or something that makes real money? But it is fun to have a real professional here who works day and night at this. And it's just great. So after USC, you went to Juilliard and continued your piano study, got a master's of piano at Juilliard. What were your aspirations? What did you think you were going to do with that degree?
Well, I thought I was going to go on and become a great concert pianist and tour the world and play concertos, and it didn't quite work out that way. It was a lot of competition. I was never the best pianist. What's interesting, though, is that it was the 2 years that I was at Juilliard that was probably my biggest immersion in the organ. Of all things.
Did you have a church job while you were at Juilliard?
I did not, but I attended a nearby church, Holy Trinity Lutheran, on Central Park West.
Oh, they do a Bach cantata every Sunday.
Right. I went to all their Bach Vespers. I was a big fan. I was very steady. I heard the pipe organ there, heard the
beautiful
traditions there. And there were organ students at Juilliard that saw my interest in the organ. And so they would put their arm around and say, we need need you to come over to the dark side.
Yes, yep. Come to the organ.
And I was still, even in the summers, I was like going back to coming here to California and filling in at like my mom's church, like St. George's.
Yeah.
And by this time, doing things like Bach's Toccata and Fugue and trying to expand, you know, the repertoire and even trying to cut my teeth on various works of Vidor, Vierne, and even Dupre, and just really, really trying to make it
but
make
still
it work.
Without the guidance of a teacher.
With it really
no
without the guidance. No,
wow.
not yet. But I did have, I certainly had a couple students introduce me to how to build an organo plano, you know, a principal chorus and how to build reeds. And I went to a lot of recitals, either from my friends, Riverside Church. I probably attended far more organ recitals. And even then, I began actually to find my entree and to be able to play organ recitals at St. Patrick's Cathedral,
wow.
Cathedral St. John the Divine. There were a lot more opportunities back then.
Well, and even now, still,
and so ironically, I ended up doing a lot more performing on the organ than I was doing on the piano. There were just
so
more opportunities.
Some little voice was telling you, you better investigate this instrument, right? But you did finish your degree at Juilliard in piano.
Yes,
and
I did.
And where'd you go from there?
Well, I got my first job at a Presbyterian church with a pipe organ. With a three-manual pipe organ. And I would sometimes, I was a good frequenter. It was not the greatest neighborhood in Queens, in Jamaica. And I would sometimes be on the 2 o'clock a.m. bus going home.
Yikes.
Because I would be doing midnight practicing.
Practice runs.
Just practice,
yeah.
Practice. But I got to a certain point. Even after I got married, I'd had the Presbyterian church job for about 5 years by then, but I knew that I did not like the sound of my choir because I was also the choir director. And I also knew that the organ playing, even though I had chops to burn, I had a piano degree from Juilliard. I could play all the literature. I knew that it somehow wasn't quite coming together. So I got this brochure in the mail, and it said Westminster Conservatory. It was the choir college, but it was the community school.
Yeah.
And they had a church music certificate program. And I looked at that. Normally, I would throw things in the trash. It just seemed to click.
So calling your name.
I went to the pastor, and I said, I've never used my education allowance. Would you be willing to pay for this for me to go once a week? He said, yes. So at age 31, I had my first formal organ lesson.
Wow.
And I brought the Prelude and Fugue in E-flat major of Bach, and I was determined to play it from memory. And I gave the teacher the music, and I sat down at the three-rank Bekkerat tracker organ. and he allowed me to play about a page. And they said, okay, let's just stop for a second. And within a half an hour, he had everything just totally torn apart. I didn't know what had hit me. I was in shock, and I knew I'd come to the right place.
As a Westminster graduate, I think you had. we'll talk a lot more about Westminster and just how, you know, I there had to have been some undoing going on.
A lot.
You know, that you had some bad technique or maybe some, just some misgivings about the stops and the choices of stops. And so, let's talk about all of that. But let's hear you play a little bit. We're going to start with a little Mendelssohn. Tell us about this piece and where you played it and when you recorded it.
Well, I actually, I've performed all six Mendelssohn sonatas. I performed them at the chapel for the bicentennial in 2009. Being Mendelssohn's bicentennial.
Yeah.
And I really did gravitate to the Preludes and Fugues and the sonatas of Mendelssohn.
They're so beautiful.
Because it just works so well for the organ and also from the piano background. So anyway, the piece you're going to hear was, I did the finale from the first sonata actually here in Orange County at the Segerstrom Hall for one of Pacific Chorale's choral festivals. John Alexander asked me to do several organ solos in addition to the choral pieces. And so this is one of the organ solos.
Well, this is a great case of hometown boy makes good, isn't it? Well, Craig, thank you. And here's a little bit of Mendelssohn. We will be back with so much more from Craig Williams, the organist at the Military Chapel at West Point. So we'll be right back. Don't go away. And we are back. We are here in the studio today with our friend Craig Williams. Craig is the organist and director of music at the Cadet Chapel at West Point. And so we just heard that he grew up here in Tustin. We have found out a little bit about his piano background, and we were just about to move him over to the dark side of being an organist. And so you just are doing some study. Did you finish your church music certificate in the extension classes there at Westminster?
Yes, I did. There were a lot of students that tried to do it in 1 year, but they really couldn't. You really had to take 2 years. And also, in addition to the organ study, there were courses in choral conducting.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was really, of course, that very fine Westminster tradition.
Well, that was the beauty of Westminster, I think, to... You know, and I've encouraged so many students to go there. And as much as I love Juilliard and Eastman and all these places, you know, the idea that most of these folks are not going to be concert organists, but they're going to go into church work. It's so wonderful to have that choral piece. You know, I think my real love for choral music came from Westminster, you know, their wonderful English tradition and how much they taught us about choral music, studying with Joe Flummerfelt.
Yes.
Some of those great folks that were there, Fraka Hausman and so many others, you know, really gave me my choral chops. You know, that I went there with some organ chops from UOP. I was an organ major in my undergrad. So, but to go to Westminster gives you that full picture, singing in those big symphonic choirs. And
yes.
So you eventually enrolled in the school itself, right?
I did. My teacher in the church certificate, he was very good friends with Eugene Rohn, who was an organ professor.
Yeah, yeah.
And he really said, you need to go on to, you know, to this grade. He knew that I had the degree from Juilliard, but he wasn't intimidated by that because he saw that I really wanted to learn not only the organ, but its literature, how to really make a choral blend, you know, and how to encourage singers to blend together. Because, I mean, I had taken myself as far as I could go, and I realized I couldn't go any further. But having done the certificate, as I was rounding the bend towards the last half of the second year, he got me into doing all these auditions. And, I mean, I did the standard. I did Manhattan. I did Juilliard. I did Westminster. And I got into all of them, which was very encouraging in organ performance. But I knew in my heart of hearts that I needed to go to Westminster. Even though I had a full-time church job in Midtown Manhattan by then, I was playing at Calvary Baptist Church in Midtown Manhattan.
Okay.
And I was living in Queens, and my wife was also working in Manhattan. She was basically a legal assistant. She was not a musician herself. But anyway, I knew adding full-time school to full-time church, it was going to be a challenge, but I knew I needed to do it. And then when the dean called me and said, by the way, I hope you're sitting down, you got the full scholarship.
Oh, is that great?
You know, then I really knew then that, you know, we were just basically, you know, on my way. And then I studied with Gene Rohn. I continued to study choral conducting with Alan Kroll and Joe Flummerfelt.
You can't do any better.
Yeah, it was amazing.
You can't do anybody. Well, I find that inspirational for two reasons. First of all, that you actually took the effort to go. I mean, you could have easily coasted around for the rest of your life playing adequately and doing the choir as best you could. And you find that all the time. I've done church music for 40 years. Yes, but have you really done it well?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and have you really, you know, when did you take the time to go back and study more about the vocal apparatus and vocal ensembles and vocal pedagogy? And so I find that incredibly inspiring that somebody already in the field, already making money, could have easily just stayed right there, that you took that leap and went back to school. That's incredibly inspiring. I just applaud you for doing that. It's wonderful. And look where it got you.
Well, I mean, that's just it. I mean, as they say in our field, there's no part-time work. There's only part-time salaries.
Right.
But I always treated even the part-time jobs like a full-time job. And I was one of the ones fortunate enough then to be able to grow into the full-time work and do a few rigorous auditions along the way.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I'm not really a competition winner. I never really went the competition route.
Nor did I.
But I did win a couple of main competitions when it comes to getting this church job or that position or whatever. And so.
So after Westminster, you even taught at the choir college for a while.
Yes. I had been at the church music certificate program in the extension of the conservatory. Mm-hmm. And my former teacher there, they were having a number of teachers step down and move on. So my former teacher now invited me to become his colleague.
Oh, isn't that great?
And it was the two of us that then began in 2 years after I got the degree. I got the degree in 97, so this is 99 now. And so we co-taught the church music certificate program for well over 10 years. And then they discontinued it. And even after that, the conservatory dean asked me to stay on as the organ faculty. So I actually stayed on there. And I was there. I only quit last year, but I was there for 19 years as their organ faculty.
Well, and that gave all sorts of people a chance to do just what you did. You know, to even while I have a job, to go back and get further instruction.
Actually, what's kind of exciting is that this year, this summer, I was invited by the dean to head up their summer organ institute.
Oh, boy.
With high school students. And there were four high school students, and they were anywhere from one person totally new to the organ, where
really?
We were introducing them to just some organ pieces as a pianist, all the way up to like one organ student who in the recital he played the prelude adagio and theme variations of Veni Creator Duraflé.
Wow.
And did it brilliantly.
Wow.
So I mean, we had all levels, and so we were teaching those high schoolers. So I think that I'll probably continue to do that as well, as long as Westminster can continue those type of programs.
Yes, well, we're hoping Westminster hangs in there.
Yeah, we're hoping.
We all need it. We need it desperately.
Yes.
Well, and even our own organist David Ball, who is a Juilliard graduate, he was my organ student through high school, and I pushed him to go to the choir college. He spent two summers there. He did the organ weeks, the organ camps, and I've had other students do that. Now, we're privileged to have three wonderful young eighth grade boys.
Wow.
All playing beautiful. Each one has a big Bach prelude and fugue, and each one has played for our choirs, and we're so proud of them. And that whole next generation,
So you're building a legacy.
We are trying our very best. Mm. We've got to have somebody to replace us. I'm ready to stop. Well, this is fantastic. And so how long was it until you actually went to West Point?
I went to West Point in 2000. And so
pretty shortly after your
degree. It was very shortly after. I had that job in Manhattan for about 5 years. And, there were some staff issues where I realized I just wasn't going to be there forever. And I wasn't exactly sure where I was going to go. But at the time, the organist at West Point was retiring. And I looked at that and I decided, well, I will apply. Just there was no chance I was going to get the job. So I might as well apply.
We always feel that,
yeah.
Don't we? Somehow. And somehow I've gotten it each time. It's unbelievable. Well, let's hear a little Bach. We've talked a lot about Bach. Why don't we hear a piece? This is Christ Lagen Todesbanden. Christ lay in
death strong bands.
Yes. And where'd you perform this?
This was actually done at a church for what was called a Hudson Valley Bach Fest.
Oh,
so this was actually on a Gressmiles organ, very similar to the Gressmiles work we have at West Point, though a smaller church. It was Christ Episcopal Church in Poughkeepsie on a Gressmiles organ, about 50 ranks.
Wonderful. Well, let's hear a little Bach, and we'll be back, and let's find out what's going on at West Point. This is Music from the Tower. We are enjoying a visit today with Craig Williams, the organist and music director at the Cadet Chapel at West Point, and we will be back to talk about that very thing. Don't go away. You were just listening to a little piece by Vierne, Louis Vierne, wonderful French organist from Notre Dame. And this was the Adagio from the Third Symphony, the fourth movement of that symphony. And we are here today with Craig Williams, and that was Craig playing at West Point. Yes, Craig?
Yes, and the Vierne was actually one of several pieces I played on the audition. I had about 25 minutes to play, and so I wanted to kind of show off a little bit. I did like a big Dupré prelude and fugue.
Good for you.
And then I did like the Handel Largo to say, I could do this for weddings. So the Vierne Adagio is like the serious piece, you know, just to show the colors and the strings and the orchestral colors of the organ. When I auditioned there, we only had 2 hours to prepare.
Wow.
So you had this massive organ.
On the third largest organ in the world.
Right. You had 2 hours.
23,000 pipes.
Yes.
As opposed to our poor Hazel with only 17,000. This is outrageous. I don't even know why I have you on the program. No, it's great. But
well, you have 5 manuals. I only have 4.
Oh, I'm so sorry. We have 2 consoles with 5 manuals. Excuse me.
You have 10 manuals.
Exactly. We have 10 manuals for our 10 fingers. But it's this is great. But so let's talk about the audition. How many people were auditioning against you there?
They only selected 5 out of probably 30-some-odd applicants. And the only reason there were that few applicants was it only went online through certain federal agencies.
Oh, okay.
And they had a very narrow window. So, but they had 30 applicants, and then they listened to 5 people. And I know I was the second person that they listened to. And they ran me through anything from the organ recital to throwing a hymn at me, asking me to play, to even rolling out a piano and seeing if I might be able to do a praise song or two that the cadets could sing along
wow.
with. And I was able to do all that. And so I was hired. I did hear an amusing story about candidate number 4 that quit after an hour of practicing and got in his car and zoomed off.
Drove away. Well, I think we've all been at that point in our church jobs, haven't we? Ready to get in our car and zoom away. Well, you've been there since April of 2000, and it sounds like a pretty good fit.
Thank you.
Tell us about what you do during the day. I mean, you're the music director and the organist. What does that mean? And you're for the Protestant chapel, right?
Yes, correct. There's a standalone Catholic chapel that's actually older than the cadet chapel. The first cadet chapel at West Point was built in 1837. And that was on the plain down by the river. And then in 1910, as they realized that West Point needed to be built up, because after the Spanish-American War, the United States was really becoming a military superpower. And so they built – Cram, Goodhue, and Ferguson was the firm that built this cathedral that was the new cadet chapel. And then very shortly thereafter, in 1911, they had the first pipes from the organ. And so the organ is 108 years old, and it started with 2,400 pipes, went up to 23,000 pipes. But in all that time, the organist choir master, which is my official title, plays the organ for all of the cadet chapel services. And at that time, it was compulsory for cadets to attend. Mm. So everyone attended, all 1,500 cadets
wow.
in the corps.
Every single
attended.
Sunday.
Yes. And by the time they built up to 4,000 people in the corps, they had 3 services back to back. Now, by the time I came on, it was all voluntary. We still had about 600 to 800 people attend one Sunday service.
Mm-hmm.
And I also direct the cadet chapel choir, which is a group of volunteer cadets that sing for the various services, much like a church choir. We do a lot. We do patriotic songs. We do the school songs. We also do very standard sacred repertoire, so my Westminster training helped greatly there.
Handy.
Many of those cadets had never had musical experience before.
Wow.
So they're all volunteer. Yeah, and I mean, as I said, it's all volunteer. But with the organ, I'm responsible for playing the Sunday service. We have VIPs come where we need to
give them demos
for the organ. We'll do maybe about 40 of those a year. We used to do about 80 weddings annually. We would do many funerals. Of course, the funerals would come up at any time. So I would estimate between the three chapels that have organs and between all the weddings, the funerals, the services and demos, that I'm pretty much responsible, myself playing and also overseeing two other organists. We're probably doing somewhere between 600 to 700 different events a year.
And all pretty high profile, probably.
Very much so. I mean, just recently, very sadly, I played a memorial service for a cadet where President Bill Clinton spoke for because the family was involved. So so Bill and Hillary were in attendance. I've also been at other things where President George W. Bush was there. Obviously, generals and various other people. We've had some very high visibility people from Washington and around the, and around the world be in the chapel.
Well, we interviewed the organist and associate director from the National Cathedral, and it was that same sort of thing. And waiting for the dignitaries and the bomb sweeps and all the other things that go on with all of that high profile.
Lots of Secret Service.
I bet. Did you have to get some kind of special clearance after being hired?
Well, yes, I have. I'm a federal employee, and so I'm a, basically I work for the Department of the Army. But I'm a civilian, so I'm not military. I'm a civilian, which means I don't have to get moved. I've been at the Cadet Chapel now for 19 years. But even there, it's not so much security clearances in terms of information, but I do have the ID that allows me access to certain points on post. And they have many, many, since 9/11, they've put in a lot of security precautions. It used to be that West Point, because West Point is this interesting, it's an Army garrison, oldest Army garrison in the country, I believe. And because it was served as an Army garrison during the Revolutionary War. But it's also a university. It formed as the Academy in 1802 under President Thomas Jefferson. And then it's, and now it's also a national monument. So it sort of has triple duty as a university, an Army post, almost like a national park where you have, we have tens of thousands of visitors a year.
I can't imagine how many.
So it can't just be a cookie cutter. Well, this is how we do security in Big Army.
Yeah.
You know, it can't be, but they still have to find ways to make the security work for all of those visitors. And then we employees, obviously, we do have to have those special access.
Could people just come to the Sunday services if they wanted to, or is it just strictly for the military?
No, it is open to the public, even though now it's to the point where people have to get special visitor passes from the visitor center to be. But the thing is that a lot of people do choose to get those passes. They last for a year. And so we do have a lot of people coming in from outside that have made the chapel their church home, in addition to cadets, in addition to faculty members and families. And so, yeah, we really do get a mix. It's not just military and cadets.
And you mentioned the Catholic chapel. Do you also play there, or do you oversee the organ or the choir there? Or?
The Catholic chapel has their own organist, but we do cover for each other frequently because she may be away with her cadet. A Catholic choir for a weekend. Actually, I was, since I'm on vacation here in Southern California, she covered for me at the Cadet Chapel.
Nice.
But I've played many an evening mass Saturday and Sunday. I even did the Easter Vigil mass this past, I mean, yeah. So yeah, we cover for each other, quite frequently and work the various liturgies.
Well, sounds like a very cool shop. How about the organ? The organ is so large and so famous.
Yes.
Is there a series of organ recitals that you play, and are those open to the public? And
we have the class of 1936, which was the most famous member of which was General Westmoreland, and he donated quite a bit of money along with some of these other families, General Heaster and some others. They started an endowment able to bring in distinguished recitalists. So we have a class of 1936 distinguished organist recital series. That brings in about 2 to 4 recitals a year. And what I actually started 3 years ago was a weekly organ recital series.
Weekly?
Yeah, in the fall and in the spring, like between September to November and then March to May, where I actually, and sometimes it's just me playing the recitals, but I also get enough other people that just want to be able to play. And so they're all extremely fine organists, and sometimes even some other instrumentalists as well. So we're probably doing close to about 20 recitals on Sunday afternoons.
Oh, that's
annually.
Great. Are you getting a good crowd for that?
Yeah, we actually are getting good crowds. So, I mean, sometimes we make it 50, but sometimes we'll get several hundred.
Yeah.
And
it's such
and
a fascinating instrument. I mean, it looks like this giant cockpit of a plane.
Well, you're surrounded because even up in the triforia, there are pipes there, the echo division and the nave division. And then the trumpet chamade is in the back. And so anybody who wants to come in and attend a service and they think they can hide by sitting in the back row, will, you know, kind of like here, you know, with the people on the sides.
That's,
you know,
right. We've
trumpet
got trumpets
on
everywhere.
Yeah, you can always punish the latecomers that way.
Well, it's kind of interesting that you say that, because we've noticed, you know, we were in the Arboretum for a long, long time on the beautiful Fred Swan organ and had such a good time there. But, you know, in a long building like that, people just would sneak in the back. You know, so if you're coming a little late, you just sneak in. Well, there's no sneaking in the Crystal Cathedral, because if you come late, you've got to sit way up in those tippy-top balconies. So you come in, you walk up a flight of stairs, then you walk out probably two more flights of stairs to get to the very, very back. So I think probably people will come more and more on time, because you're really punished when you come late. And you're right. We have one. Hazel finally does play. We've got those two big trumpet chamades on both sides. So we're going to go, oh, you're late. Just here's a little horn to announce your arrival. So, when we come back, I want to talk about that you did grow up here and you've played here at the Crystal Cathedral, and a little bit more about your career as a recitalist. But what a fascinating look at your time at the chapel. You don't have any plans to leave anytime soon, I hope. You've done marvelous things there, and it's just great. Well, let's hear one more piece. This is also recorded at the West Point Chapel. And this is a little Vidor, since we're on our French jag right now, from the Vidor 6. But not the famous first movement, but the fifth movement, the last movement, right?
Yes.
All right. Well, here's a little Vidor. This, again, is Craig Williams playing the great organ at the West Point Chapel. And we will be right back with whole lots more about Craig and his life, even playing here at Crystal Cathedral. So do stay tuned. Don't go away. Welcome back. This is Music from the Tower. And today in our tower, we have Craig Williams, the organist and the director of music from the Cadet Chapel at West Point. We had a fascinating look at the life of West Point and even a little bit about their security and all that you go through. You were saying a little bit during the break about a Messiah performance and how hard that is. And here come instrumentalists with black cases full of things that need to be investigated and scanned or whatever. It's not easy, is it?
No, it definitely, we do have an annual Handel's Messiah where we probably have about 1,000 people in the chapel, 800 in the audience. We get various choirs from the area amassing about 150 singers.
Oh, that's great.
We have the orchestra with the organ, of course, but we have an orchestra of about 20, which is about all that can fit, in the choir area. But it really, it's a great event. We just did our 60th annual Handel's Messiah this past year.
Isn't that wonderful?
So we're now moving into our seventh decade.
Nice.
And it was unstopped. I mean, it started even before the Vietnam War and just kept going without even being stopped. But with these security measures, it's interesting. And as I mentioned before, but I said, if they can get 30,000 people into a football game on a Saturday, we should be able to get 1,000 people into the chapel on a Sunday afternoon. And it is very exciting that we can continue to do these Sunday afternoon recitals. And usually when we have visiting choirs and things like that, I encourage them to participate in our Sunday morning 10:30 morning service.
Yeah. Even if they're singing a little recital in the afternoon.
Yeah, they might be able to do something like that, but I'll encourage them to maybe do about 15 minutes of prelude music, and there's about two or three places in the service where they can sing something for the collection of offering, and it's nice then for our parishioners as well to hear. So we get anything from high school choirs from Texas and Oklahoma.
Oh, I bet.
To choirs. Like, we're going to have a choir from Brooklyn in a couple weeks. And just a lot of different multicultural events and lots of different ages. And so it's very exciting that the chapel is a wonderful place to sing. Everybody loves to sing in this grand Gothic structure, which isn't too big. It's maybe 2.5 seconds of reverberation.
That's nice, though.
And it's very, very nice. People love to sing in it. And so it's great to be able to do these different events there.
And I bet organists, too. I bet you're inundated with people who want to play the organ.
And it's nice because with the recital series, Well, you know what happened was we didn't always do the weekly organ recital series, but it was kind of a mistake. I advertised it as saying, these are the four organ recitals we're doing in the year, and they're all Sundays at 2:30 p.m. Well, people read that as being, oh, all Sundays at 2:30 p.m., there's a recital. So we would have people come, and they'd say, what happened? There was no recital. And so little by little, I realized there was actually a demand.
You did it for yourself. Yeah.
For doing more, because people were showing up to the chapel, and they were disappointed there was no organ recital. So that's when I said, well, then let's start offering more. And besides, we knew that, you know, it's a challenge when you have such a monumental organ, but it is on an army installation. And sometimes it's a little hard to get to. We're not in downtown Philadelphia or even in the middle of Orange County.
Yeah.
And so we have to keep up our higher profile. And sometimes people don't even realize that we're still in business. This organ is still playing. We still have a lot of maintenance going on. The blowers are being replaced. We have two full-time curators on staff that are managing a lot of different work that's being done there. And little by little, we'll have the console redone. We're even having pipes continue to be added to the organ as we build up the pedal.
And just in case Hazel starts adding pipes, you want to make sure you stay ahead.
Well, you know what's funny about that is that it used to be that Wanamaker's department store had six Vox Humanas on the organ. When they found out that we had eight, now they have nine.
Oh, see. There is that little competition, you know. I lived in Philadelphia, and I was even on the board of the Wanamaker organ. But as the Atlantic City organ became more and more online, you saw the Wanamaker sprucing up. You know? They used to be the largest playing organ because Atlantic City, most of it didn't play, unfortunately. But now, as more and more is coming, now they've got pistons. Now some of the pipes are all back.
It's very exciting.
It's very exciting. And so... And that's going to be the thrilling part about Hazel being back. It's going to be back for the first time in perfect working order.
Wonderful.
You know, we'll have of course curators on staff, our wonderful Brian Sawyers. But it's going to be a very exciting time for the organ world. You know,
yeah, I look forward to hearing it.
Yes, we have May 15, 16, 17 is our dedication weekend, and already the hotel blocks are sold out.
Wow.
You know, it's amazing that a year out. People were clamoring for, we haven't put the tickets on sale yet, but it's going to be an exciting weekend. Diane Bush is here, and she's going to do a Joy of Music program, which will be shown that week. Michael Barone will be here doing a Pipe Dreams that weekend, and Paul Jacobs, Hector Oliveira playing, Fred Swan, of course.
Beautiful.
It's going to be, we're going to have the book on Hazel there that weekend. So there'll be book signings and all sorts of exhibits, and it's just going to be a wonderful weekend for the organ. And it's organs like ours that give the thrill to young students.
Well, it's really how I had my beginning, too, because even in my first church job at the small Lutheran church in Tustin, because it ended a little early, we would then hop in the car and run over to the Crystal Cathedral and usually catch Fred Swan's postlude. Sometimes being up in those balconies and hearing him blast the trumpets in your left ear. But, I mean, that was a huge part of my excitement of the organ early on, even when I was embroiled in concert piano study and all that. And so it was a great inspiration to a lot of people. I know a lot of people that can say that Fred Swan and the Crystal Cathedral was really a big part of their initial excitement of the organ. Yeah. And we're trying to do a little bit of that West Point, too. We don't have a lot of cadets that play, but I do have a couple of cadets that they play well enough. I get them to hop on the console and get excited about it, and so it's a lot of fun.
Well, you know, I think it's the responsibility of anyone who is fortunate enough to have a fabulous organ at their disposal, not only to share it with the next generation, but to just share it with everybody. Mm-hmm. Even just moving the last couple of weeks over to the cathedral building itself, where people don't just all rush out like they did but they're all milling around. You know, we've kind of extended our postludes to be a little bit longer now.
Nice.
Let people just hear the organ. People come up and, you know, we aren't using Hazel right now, but even to just see the console is a thrill for people. They can't imagine anything so huge. And of course, we have two of them, you know, so it's been a thrill for us. And I remember as a kid myself, you know, my home base was Grace Cathedral in San Francisco,
sure.
Going there to hear Richard Purvis and these great organists that would come there. It's a thrill. Well, it's absolutely been a thrill to have you here in the studio, to get to know you. This was a wonderful chance while you were in town visiting family to get to have you here. You've got a little tie to the Crystal Cathedral. You actually played there, right? Did you do some playing in the
cathedral? Yes, I did. In 2003, 2004, and as they were beginning to move out of the Organ Power series, I think I was one of the last recitals. And while Chris Pardini was still organist, he gave me the opportunity to be able to do a couple recitals here, which was thrilling. The last recital, what he did was we did the first half of the recital in the Arboretum, where you have the Fred Swan organ, and then we moved to Hazel in the main cathedral for the second half of the recital.
That's very
so
cool.
So people just moved across the courtyard.
Yeah,
was just to hear two different organs, and it was exciting. It was great.
Well, we're so fortunate here on the campus to have two of the largest organs in the world. You know, one of the great Aeolian Skinners still playing and functioning. Our beautiful Fred Swan organ. We're so fortunate here. But that's the first time I heard anybody talk about progressive organ recitals. We might have to put that into practice.
That was Chris's idea. It was great. It was a great idea.
Well, he's a wonderful person. We can't wait to have him back. We can't wait to have you back. So come and visit the next time you're here. And we have a piece to end our show today that's actually not only you playing, you performing, but it's your piece, right?
This, yes.
It's called Festival Flourish. It grew out of an improvisation, did it?
Yeah, it was a Festal Flourish. And the reason I called it that is it's based on the festal song, Rise Up. The cadets sing Rise Up, O Men of God, but now we sing Rise Up, O Saints of God.
Yes, or
whatever
somebody
is,
of God.
Whatever, yeah, yeah.
It's a wonderful tune, nonetheless. So this is a big toccata on that. And again, thank you so much, Craig, for being with us here in the tower. We hope that you'll be a frequent visitor as you come to visit family, and I can't wait to have you come and play Hazel when she's back in town and going strong. And this has been Music from the Tower, and as always, we encourage you to go out and listen to music in live performance. As you heard, it inspired our guest today. We hope it will inspire you. So get out there. Here's some great music in live performance. And this is A Festive Flourish by Craig Williams. And you've been listening to Music from the Tower. And until next time, we will see you soon. Thanks for listening. And this is John Romero, your host, signing off for today. Thanks for listening.